with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
Well, what if you can't start paying your student loan payments in October? Today, we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, student loan forbearance ends in September of this year. So what if you can't pay? College admissions expert John Apollo is here to weigh in. John, welcome to Prudent Money.
Bob, great to be with you. Good afternoon.
You know, I can't tell you how many times we've started or we were planning on or intending to talk about this, and keeps getting pushed to the next program. So today we're definitely going to follow up and talk about this subject because I think it is a big deal come September and October timeframe. Before we jump onto today's topic, but I do want to point out a scam that is making the rounds. So let me ask you something, John. Are you getting the phone calls on your cell phone on a daily basis from AT&T trying to sell you a package, a promotional package? Or I can't think of the other one right off the top of my head, but are you getting those?
Oh, I'm getting those calls all day long, Bob, and I stopped answering the phone if I don't recognize the number. I miss some good calls once in a while, but I also miss a whole bunch of those scammers and the fishers, as they call them, I guess.
Isn't it amazing, though, that actually works? I mean, it has to work or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it's actually really terrible when you come right down to it. And my 89-year-old father passed earlier this year, and every once in a while he would call me and say, oh, this fella called me today, and how did he know my computer was on? Or, you know, he offered me this or that. And you just realize it's not just the elderly that these scammers prey on, but I've been reading recently, Bob, that it's really like the millennials and some of the younger folks who don't have experience saying no, and they're very trustworthy. They're saying yes to some scams that will just make your hair stand up.
Well, and they're so believable. Like this is a brand new one that's come out, and I wanted to mention it because this I think this has the possibility of fooling people. He starts out, hello, my name is Chase Walker. My agent ID is 732. My number is. Reason why I was calling you is to let you know that your student aid is qualified for the forgiveness program. We may be able to grant you a partial or a full forgiveness package. Just to let you know, this program has limited openings and is on a first-come, first-served basis. Just call me back as soon as you can to finalize the details. Again, my number is. Incidentally, I did call that number. Of course, this was a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago when I got this particular phone call, and it was a disconnected number. But it is very believable. You know, number one, you hear all these forgiveness programs flying backwards and forwards and people talking about it, and then you wonder, then there's part of you that really wants it to be true. And so, you know, you might just call, and I guess it depends on how convincing the person is on the other line.
Bob, that's right. About 6 or so months ago, my 20-something daughter, who has an outstanding student loan, received a very similar message, and she immediately called me and said, I have this opportunity to have my loan forgiven. Should I call them back? And it's a scam very similar to this one, and I went through it with her, and I told her about all of the sort of pitfalls. And I think when it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But there are also certain things that I think the listeners should really look out for. And I told my daughter this just generally. One is that, you know, that the in this case that you read, it said my agent ID number is. Now, I told her most times with legitimate calls, someone's not going to call up and sort of try to confuse you by sounding really official by saying my name is Chase Walker, agent ID number, right? So that's one thing to look for. You hear that, my antenna goes up. And then also, the other thing, as you were saying, that caught my ear was that they talked about student aid. And student aid, it's sort of a misuse of the term, right? They're really talking about student loans. So if this were something that could be real, you'd expect them to be a little bit more exact and say they're calling about your student loans.
That's a good
and then the last
point.
Sort of dead giveaway here is when you start hearing about limited openings, call immediately, first come, first serve. Then you pretty much know that something's not right. But again, they're preying on our emotion, and particularly in this time where you really want to get a break and you want to find something that's going to be good, and they go out and do this. Very interestingly, Bob, on the studentaid.gov website, this is a federal government's website, they have two pieces of advice up there that are really terrific. One of them, it says in a yellow box, never pay an outside company for help with your federal student loans, which I would have said if it weren't on their website. I thought it was really great that they actually put it out and they put it in bold. And then a little bit more down in their website, it talks very specifically, and it says, if you are asked to pay an enrollment, a maintenance, a subscription, or any fee that sounds like one of these, walk away from it, because anything to do with your federal student loan will be provided to you for free. So again, I'm so happy that you brought this up, because it is out there. Apparently, people do answer this, and they fall prey to victims. They become victims of these scams. And my guess is what would have happened if it wasn't a disconnected number, or if you had talked to Chase, if that's really his name when he called, they would have offered to help you for some fee. And that would have been the giveaway that this is really not a legitimate program. It's absolutely a scam.
Yeah, you got to love that. My name is Chase Walker. That sounds kind of Hollywood, yeah. Doesn't it?
but it has a ring to it, doesn't it?
But to be clear, there are no programs in existence today that would do this, correct?
No legitimate programs.
Legitimate being the key
That's
word.
Exactly right. There are not. Yep, there are not.
Well, let's fast forward to what's coming up down the pike, the forbearance programs. Talk about a little bit about what it is, how long it's been, and the significance of September.
That's great, Bob. It's been in existence so long, people have almost forgotten why and when it started. But I remember pretty clearly it started on March 13th, 2020. It was the very beginning of the worst of the pandemic. And the government, the CARES Act, and some of the other regulations that came after that said that they wanted to provide students with an opportunity to pay 0% interest rate, not have any of their payments due, and not have any collection activity. And then they started moving that date. You know, first it was sometime, I think if I remember correctly, in the summer, then it was to September 30th, and then it rolled over to the first of this year. And now the real deadline looks like it is going to be September 30th. And by the way, Bob, September 30th is not an accidental date. October 1 is when the federal budget year begins.
So okay. You
often see programs sunset on September 30th or are renewed starting October 1. So the September 30th date is not pulled out of the sky. For budget purposes, that's why it's September 30th. So the question is, okay, September 30th is sort of right in front of us. What's going to happen? There are a couple things that are going on, all of which I think have a fairly low probability at the moment. But the president right now is considering the options. And the option basically is to do nothing and let the payments start on October 1st, or to do something, which is to extend the forbearance for some period of time. And of course, you know, Elizabeth Warren and the people all the way on the left are saying, well, let's extend it through budget year 2022. So we'll come back and look at it on October 1, 2022. There are others who are saying, well, let's just extend it for 1 month, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months. The problem I think they're going to have with these extensions, Bob, is that the president, on one hand, is out talking about how the economy's recovering, jobs are up. The jobs report last Friday was a good one. So it's hard to argue on one hand there are tons of jobs around, and on the other hand, poor students can't find a job, so therefore they should, not students, but graduates can't find a job, so therefore we should provide an extension of their student loan benefits. So politically, I think he's between a rock and a hard place on that. And then the last point, which is, I think, a really important point, is that these programs are only in force for federal student loans, and not all of them, but most of the federal student loans. So you still have those folks who borrowed from the private loan programs, either a bank or a credit union or maybe a state agency, who were required to make the payments all along, and then those on the other side who had the federal direct loans who have no longer been required to make those payments. So I think the payments are going to start again fairly soon, probably October 1. Maybe a short delay, but I'm thinking that that might not happen.
Well, it'll be interesting to see exactly what they do and what they're going to expect the Americans to juggle, because you also have the extended unemployment claims benefits going away September 6th, and those are going to interlap between the two camps. There are people who have student loan debt and people who are unemployed and on claims. So I can't imagine that they allow both of those to actually sunset and create that kind of situation, because a Pew Research survey said that 67% of people who owe money to student loan debt would not be able to pay if it started up today. That's an enormous number.
Yeah, it's a huge number, and there was another article out not all that long ago that pegged that number close to 90%.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure, frankly, if it was those are people who don't want to start paying or they can't start paying. That's a pretty fundamental difference there.
100% don't want to pay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, I don't know the data, I don't know the sources, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a sunset of that, and the question is when, and what's going to happen to the borrowers who, whenever that day comes, maybe it's October 1 this year, or maybe it's January 1 or March 1 or whenever it happens. I'm not a betting man, but I'd bet a quarter that sometime in the next year, the sunset is going to occur. And so we're going to have the same argument either October 1 this year or some other date soon. So what's going to happen to those people who can't or won't pay, and what can they do to start to either, A, find more relief or get back in the habit of paying? That's going to be the question, I think.
Yeah, I think that the back in the habit of paying, that ship has sailed. I think that problem, no matter if you extend it or not, it's going to be a huge problem. But I could, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I almost agree with Elizabeth Warren that we do go through another budget year. But I think that, because it's one of those things, what do you do if you can't pay? I mean, what steps do you take? I'm sure there's not just great options.
Well, it's really interesting. There's no better option than not having to pay. So, given that, I'll stipulate, yes, I agree that, the best option is not having to pay. But also on the other side of it, and I think I lean sort of where you are, your heart says, gee, I really want to give people more time. But my brain and the banker in me says, maybe it's time to start getting back in the habit of getting people to pay. And as your point, which I agree with 100%, no matter when that day comes, there's going to be a hiccup because they're out of the habit. So we've got to sort of get through that period. So what the question you're asking, I think, which is the right one, is when that day comes and you can't pay as a borrower of a federal student loan, what do you do?
Right.
And the one thing that you and I have talked about in the past, I said, and I now say it in big, bold letters, don't put your head in the sand. If you get to that date and you can't make that first payment, the most important thing that any borrower of a federal student loan can do is to call their student loan servicer and say, I can't make the payment. And once you do that, then you trigger some options that you could have. And a couple of those are, let me put it this way, all of those were in place before the pandemic, but some of them may become more relevant now. One of them, for instance, is that the student loan servicer can switch you into an income-driven repayment program. So arguably, if you don't have any income, you can't make a payment against your loan because you don't have any income. And if you get into one of those programs where you're in an income-driven repayment program, and you're not making payments because you don't have a job, you're not in trouble. You're not delinquent. You're not in default on your loan. You're in a payment program that's appropriate for your income level. So I think that that's not terrible news. But the key to it is what I said. You need to contact a student loan servicer immediately. When you do that 6 months down the line, then you're a delinquent, a nearly defaulted borrower, and your choice set narrows really quickly. So calling the student loan servicer, asking for an income-driven repayment, or more importantly, if you don't even know that term, to say, what are my options? I don't have a job. What do I do here? And they'll help find the right program. The other options are potentially to apply for an economic hardship or some other kind of deferment. But again, nobody needs to know any of these terms. You just need to call the student loan servicer and tell them what your circumstance is and then go through the process that's been put up. And I'll say the other side of that coin, which is, I think, another important point, is that the student loan servicers have come under criticism and a lot of fire over the last several years about not being forthright with what those payment possibilities are. With the change of administration and some of the new folks who are now occupying the highest offices in the powers of the U.S. Department of Education are borrower advocates. And they're making sure that the student loan servicers are offering programs that should be offered, and they're really holding their feet to the fire. So, again, long way of saying what I'll end with where I started. You have a problem, call your student loan servicer. Really critical.
You know, that's just unimaginable that they wouldn't shoot straight with the student loan borrower what exactly their options are. I mean, that's the problem, is that nobody really knows. I would say the vast majority of people who are in this situation don't know that they do have options. And like you said, the worst thing that you can do is bury your head in the sand, and that's kind of that human nature tendency to go that route.
It is. You know, you get scared. You think you're in trouble. You really don't know what to do. Maybe you have a little optimism and hope that next month will be better than this month, and all of a sudden four or five of them or six or a year go by, and you're not in a better place. And by not taking that action, you've actually dug a pretty big hole, because what happens, Bob, is that if I miss a student loan payment, I'm going to notice, 30-day notice, that I'm late. But then that interest gets added on to my loan balance, right? And so every month that I'm delinquent, the hole gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and all that accrued interest starts piling up. And at the end of the process, you hear these huge outstanding federal loan balances, like well in excess of what the borrowing limit is. You say, well, how could that be? Well, oftentimes the answer to that, it can be because the borrower didn't take any action, and that accrued interest just dwarfed the principal amount that was originally owed. You know, maybe they're delinquent or defaulted for 4 or 5 years, and that interest kept piling up and piling up. So, again, go call the student loan servicer. And I've said on your show before, and I don't often credit the federal government, but I'll tell you that the studentaid.org site is a pretty good one. If you go up there, and everybody knows how to Google these days, if you Google student loan forgiveness or student loan deferment or any of those terms, you're going to get some really good information that's easy to read, tips like the one I talked about in the big yellow box saying, don't pay anybody for this, call your student loan servicer. If folks are struggling, use the resources, and they'll help you to the extent that it's possible. And there are some really good programs now in place, like these income-driven repayment programs, where if folks don't have jobs, there aren't required payments. So, check out the options and try to resist the big damaging point, which is the one you made. Is that as a human being, I like to make believe sometimes that I don't actually have a problem, thinking it's going to get better on its own. And in my experience, Bob, that hasn't happened very often. So be a little proactive, and you might find yourself getting some help you didn't expect.
You know, you're talking about the government website being a really good resource. You know what else is a real good resource? Is the IRS.gov. I don't know if you've ever been to that website, but that is an excellent resource. As much flack as the IRS catches, their website's actually pretty good. Now, one thing I want to bring up, if you were to Google that, you're going to get probably every scam marketing ploy that is possible in the results. How do you know for sure it is the government's website?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I come up with student loan forgiveness. I put in my search engine browser 2021. There are a whole bunch of articles there, but then I go down and I see studentaid.gov, and when I go on the studentaid.gov site, it says an official website of the United States government. If you're going on a site that may be looking like it's real, but they start asking for information such as for further use of the site, please give us your email address, or go in the chat box and give us your phone number, or they're asking for any information at all, then that's a key indicator that this is not a U.S. government site. Again, the point that's really important is that these programs were created to try to help student borrowers, and they don't ask for money. The student loan servicers don't ask for money. The federal government doesn't ask for money. And that's, to me, a key point. Somebody's asking you for money for help on your student loan, then it's probably not a legitimate site.
John's website is mycollegecorner.com. Real quick, John, I've got about a minute and a half. Talk a little bit about what the latest from Washington on student loan debt that you're hearing.
Well, the latest is that the federal government hired a new deputy general counsel who was previously the founder of a project called the Project on Predatory Student Lending. And this is really important, Bob, because he wrote the legal opinion that the president has the executive authority to cancel student loan debt. So we'll see what happens there. This whole idea that the president was going to be able to write away student loan debt has been out there for about 6 months or so. He asked for a legal opinion from the Department of Education on whether or not he can do that. The inside baseball on this is the president really doesn't want to cancel student loan debt, but he's trying to find some even ground with the left side of his party. So I think of all the news I read, that was the one that caught my eye the most. There seemed to be putting in place at least an opportunity for a big hearing on the possible forgiveness of student loan debt by executive order. My two cents, I'd be shocked if that actually happened, but they seem to be putting the pieces in place to at least explore it.
Well, as I always say, it's going to be interesting. We'll see what happens. Once again, mycollegecorner.com is the great website that John Apollo has, and there's a lot of free information on that site and a lot of great resources. And if you're a parent whose son or daughter is getting ready to go to college, in other words, you just started your freshman year in high school, you need to be looking at these resources that John's got available. John, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program. Great information. We'll see you next month.
Very good, Bob. My pleasure. Be well.
God bless. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. I do appreciate it. It's interesting because President Biden wants to forgive $10,000. And I think you got to be looking at what's really going to happen. Yeah, that's important to have that relief. But what about cash flow, making those payments? I wonder what kind of a dent that will actually really make. We'll see. Hey, this is Bob Brooks. You got a question for me? Please go to the website at prudentmoney.com and send it in, because we are all out of time. Until we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.